Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, look at that, Dave Solomon. Sweetest thing in the whole wide world. Oh, that makes me feel so good whenever he does the intro for the show because he volunteered his service quite a while ago. And speaking of which, do you know that Hybrid Jazz is going to be 2 years in August? Isn't that crazy? Oh my gosh, how has this been possible? Oh my gosh, if you only knew the circumstances behind the scene, you would be open-mouthed from here until 4 o'clock, at which time the show will end. We have a wonderful show today. Honest to goodness, we do. The music is just fabulous. Couple of surprises to throw at you. The guest that we have at the top of next hour, I can't say enough about this young man. I discovered him completely by surprise. And some of the best things in life happen that way, don't they? He is a young man in his 20s, just a few years older than my son. He has accomplished quite a bit in jazz, and his vision of jazz is just a little different. Actually, in some ways, a lot different. You'll hear. His name is Joshua Quassman, and I'm thrilled to be interviewing him and picking his brain to see where he's coming from musically. As is the case, we like to start things off with something classic, Cannonball Adderley from the 60s, 1964 to be specific. Fiddler on the Roof, yes, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
of mine entitled Searching for Peace.
Thank you.
This is Hybrid Jazz.
Fast asleep like Rip and Winkle, lost in a dream for far too long. While his life went on without him, and the whole world forgot his song. Having a nap like Mr. Winkle, off of the map and laying low. Lost his spark, misplaced his twinkle, taking a snooze, but don't you know? Now he's awake, yes, he's alive. Make no mistake, he still won't take no jive. Yes, he's earned most every wrinkle. He sees the world in shades of gray, 'cause time off has made him wiser than that young man of yesterday.
Singers there is, not only for this era, but honestly, for my ears, any era. I just love this woman so much. and was so blown away when I first saw her at a little college. I saw her in an intimate room with this hellacious band, and her voice, I thought, I honestly had to pinch myself and think, where am I? She's just so extraordinary. Jackie Ryan is her name. Listen here, the album that she did with John Clayton and friends, including John's wonderful son, Gerald, who you heard on the show a few weeks ago, an incredible array of musicians. Obed Calvert on drums, Gilbert Castellanos on trumpet, Ricky Woodard on sax, Graham Dechter on guitar, and man, they all got her so much, and everybody was so tickled to be working with one another. That was Rip Van Winkle from the number one jazz CD. It was for several weeks, just as Doozy had been a few years before. She is extraordinary, and if you get a chance to see Jackie Ryan, please do. She is going to be coming, I'm so tickled about this, to Philly and to Baltimore at the Art Museum. One of the most glorious things that we have in the city of Baltimore is a special neighborhood where the Baltimore Museum of Art is nestled. You cannot believe the setting of this museum, that the work inside is wonderful. There is a spectacular restaurant inside. And when they have these jazz shows, they're outside, and usually the weather is pretty fabulous. To hear Jackie's voice soar across those trees, oh my gosh, just amazing. And she's going to be in Birdland in New York on July 4th. Extra fireworks for the city that night, yes. Grace Kelly was the second song in the set. Little Grace just turned 21 yesterday. Oh my. From Live at Scullers, that was her song, Searching for Peace. GraceKellyMusic.com has more information about this saxophonist, singer, composer, arranger, teacher. Grace is going to be in, actually she is right now, in Alaska. Yes! Tonight. Oh my gosh, I'll bet she has a blast. She's going to be there for a couple of nights. Then it's Juneau, and then she's going to go to Sitka, and she will be playing at the Los Angeles-based Playboy Jazz Festival in June. Thereafter, she's going to go to Switzerland and Copenhagen. She's having a ball. So talented, so wonderful, so sweet. We had so many listeners for that show, live and archived. It wasn't even funny. I wish her the best. Happy birthday to you, Grace. Cannonball Adderley, a whole album full of Fiddler on the Roof tunes. And it was one of the most extraordinary albums. Jazz folks could not get enough of this. Isn't that something? A 4-star rating from a few different sources. Yeah, on Capitol Records, we heard the title track, Fiddler on the Roof, material from the Broadway show. With Cannonball, it was Brother Nat on cornet, Joe Zawinul on piano. Oh, yeah. Sam Jones on bass, Lewis Hayes on drums, and the incredible Charles Lloyd on tenor sax and flute, who you will hear a little bit later on. I just love Charles Lloyd, and man, just one of those legends, and a quiet legend, not so much spoken of in loud terms, but one of those people, when you say his name, there are so many who go, oh, Charles Lloyd. So much to say about him, and we will. And Cannonball, what can you say about Cannonball? Just so you know, a little bit of trivia. In high school, because Julius was known to be such a fast and, how shall we say this, voracious eater, stuff just disappeared off his plate. He was known as Cannibal. That became Cannonball. Don't ask. I don't know. Maybe there's stuff we don't want to know. And just so you know something else, both brothers, Cannonball and Nat, were in Florida, and Cannonball was known to be something else in the neighborhood, Tallahassee. And in the early stages of Ray Charles' career, in the 40s, Nat and Cannonball were both working with the great Ray Charles. So all that greatness rubbed off one another, and everybody's name is etched in stone in many music circles. We have another one of those cats who's etched in stone forever will be. Passed away far, far too soon. He's going to be in the set, the great Wayman Tisdale. And working his way into legendary status is going to be our guest next hour, Joshua Quassman. Man, wait till you hear some of this work. It's just phenomenal. Another one of those wonderful guys. Man, 73 years young, worked with some mighty folks and became mighty in the process. And one of the people that he worked with, because Clint Eastwood tapped him especially to work on that Bird soundtrack, the tribute to Charlie Parker, was somebody who actually picked up that Charlie Parker torch and made a saxophone sound very much like Charlie, but then again, very much his own. Charles McPherson. This is Morning Dance from Manhattan Nocturne from back in the 90s on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
search to find the love within.
I came back to let you know, got a thing for you,
and I can't let go.
My friends wonder what is wrong with me.
Well, I'm in a daze from your love, you see.
I'll tell you what, it has been a little bit of a drought as far as going out. I have saved some pennies very carefully. On May 25th, that gentleman who was a guest not that long ago on Hybrid Jazz will be at Ram's Head. Wonderful venue for experiencing the great Bobby Caldwell from 1978, What You Won't Do for Love. And I know folks identify Bobby with that song almost exclusively sometimes, but when you really look at the body of work this man has done, we could be talking about him from now until next Sunday. No joke. Cat in the Hat, August Moon, Blue Condition, just some of the follow-up albums that he had. Film soundtracks, in case you are familiar with Ghostbusters 2. There was a song that Bobby wrote that James J.T. Taylor sang in that film. Peter Cetera sang Stay With Me from Princess from the Moon, both of those in the 80s. So much more. Peter Cetera and Amy Grant, of course. Next Time I Fall in Love. Woo! And his latest from 2012. Pick up on that, too, because it's just vintage, Bobby Caldwell. House of Cards is the name of that. Just loved, absolutely loved my time with Bobby, and he spent a whole hour with us. And it's one of those situations, it happens frequently on the show, we just love that, that artists say they have a certain amount of time, but they wind up spending a lot more time. And sometimes you just can't get them off the phone. It was great. Bobby Caldwell, in case you are in the area and hearing Ram's Head on May 25th, it's going to be a blast. Wayman Tisdale was the second song in that set, Mercer. Man, I just get caught up in thinking about the times that Wayman was among us. We were fortunate in that we had a radio station in Baltimore that he loved. He not only loved talking to Lori Lewis, the program director, he had a great love for Lori, but he loved coming to a certain place where we had him. He actually has a video talking about Circuit City in Catonsville, no longer a chain, but at the time that it was cooking, that electronics and music store was happening. We had a line one day for Wayman around the store. It was just phenomenal. He was signing autographs. He did a little bit of a music thing, and he was very, very kind to my son. He was not only kind to my son, though one of the special gifts that he had, Wayman, he was able to pick up on what was going on. He didn't have to be told that my son was autistic, but he picked up on it, and he zoomed in to Tiernan. So that was special for everybody who witnessed it, because Wayman didn't make a big deal. He just wanted to make sure that my son got loved up, and T never forgot it. Yeah, and this bears mentioning. Wayman had the anniversary of his passing yesterday, May 15th, 2009. And it just goes to show you how important scenarios are. Wayman, he got up one night. This is going back now. Late 2008. And he stumbled and he fell down the steps and he broke his leg. And when he got to the hospital, x-rays were done, of course, and apparently there was cancer that weakened the bone, and that's why he fell. This incredible hulk of a man, one of the most awesome centers and power forwards in the NBA. So he had to get chemotherapy. That's what he chose to do anyway. And he really thought that he was going to beat it. Fit for a prosthesis. And the doctors were marveling because they had to make a special one, of course, for his size and height. And usually it takes 2-3 months to get into the frame of mind where this is going to work for you. It took him a month. He was so determined. He was so positive 24/7. So consequently, on May 15th, 2009, when his beautiful wife, Regina, felt led to take him back to the hospital, everybody thought that Wayman's cancer was in remission. But it wasn't, and his death was a shock. Matter of fact, he was planning the next week to go into the recording studio with Norman Brown. So, man, when we were all watching the service that day, whoa, a lot of us who had spent time with Wayman were really just riveted and stunned, and when we still are, because he was one of the most positive forces ever in our midst. He was a powerful, powerful man, and if you ever get a chance to see the documentary about him, woo, you make sure that you see it with some folks, because you're going to be weeping a little bit. Charles McPherson, we heard to start the set, alto sax composer, especially well known for his time with Charles Mingus from 1960 to 1972. Charles McPherson is still with us at the age of 73. You heard Morning Dance from his 1998. Matter of fact, he recorded it in May. Manhattan Nocturne, the name of the LP at that time. Bobby Sanabria on conga. Mulgrew Miller on piano, Ray Drummond on bass, Victor Lewis on drums. So nice to hear seasoned musicians do their things so, so well. Big part of why the soundtrack for the movie Bird from Clint Eastwood was so successful, because Clint had Charles work with him on it, and Charles is still doing his thing. Just would love to have a chance to talk to him and pair him up with somebody like this, our guest in the next several minutes. In case you have never heard something from the really outstanding Joshua Quasman, you're about to hear something that he handpicked from his Songs of the Spirit Brothers CD. Just a little, it's so funny how some people affect you this way. I am just a little thrown, excited, because I just got to know this gentleman in the past several weeks. Songs of the Brother Spirit. Gosh, I have to go back to my notes. Joshua Quasman, who is a multi-instrumentalist, and you are going to see how outstanding this set is. Actually, it's one song, and it's 9 minutes, and he's gonna be calling while the song is playing. So hopefully he'll be just as thrilled to hear his song play while he's waiting on the phone. This is called Our Land on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. That is what you call painting a musical landscape. Oh, my gosh, you have no idea. When I first heard this gentleman and those that he surrounded himself with to make this kind of magic come alive and feed your soul, of course I had to do the research. I found out how old he was, and I'm just so blown away because this kind of music is really only turned out by those who are at least twice as old as he. So in our midst, and this is why I was stumbling earlier as I was trying to describe him, this is a wise soul in his 20s who has captured the essence of so much that others have tried to do, and without him too much, I'm just going to introduce him right now, a wizard of woodwinds, a composer of rare proportion, and I'm thrilled to tell you that he's my guest right now, Joshua Quasman. Joshua.
Hello.
How are you?
I am great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I hope I didn't embarrass you too much, but I have to speak my heart.
Not at all. I'm very flattered. Thank you very much.
You are welcome. It's just one of those situations whereby, and this is how I found out about you. Fortunately, I'm in communication with DL Media in Bella Cynwyd, PA, which is near my hometown, Philly, and found out about you because of your wonderful CD. We just heard Our Land, and I thought let's pursue this because this young man sounds interesting. Joshua, the background that you have is so fabulous. Do you really feel at this point, because you must feel as if you are on the precipice of this amazing adventure?
I do. You know, it's funny because it feels like I've been doing this. I wrote this music over a period of 5 or 6 years, and now I feel like with this album, I feel like I'm just kind of getting started. You know, I have a whole other album that I've been working on for the last year, so things are really moving, I guess you could say.
Oh, without a doubt. And I'm just so taken because I want you to, from the very beginning of our time together, tell me, how is it that you came to be so focused on the meaning of the CD? It's really about a friendship, basically, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. That's kind of the core of what it is, yeah.
And why is that? Because it's pretty rare to hear an artist describe what they're doing essentially for a project as doing something to explore the nooks and crannies of a friendship that really has been a lifetime friend situation, has it not?
Absolutely, since I met him when I was in third grade, and we've been very best friends even to this day. That's a very long time for my life.
Oh, yeah. And Justin is his name. And
yes.
Did you idolize Justin? How is that? I mean, you're friends, but it's one of those situations where you, and I was so struck by this, you took many a bike ride together, and it was always a big adventure, and you always knew that he would bring you home safely.
Yeah, you know, ever since the first day I met him, I just thought this was somebody I could look up to. He was so mature for his age. Even in third grade, he was, you know, everybody, even the adults, thought he was older. And I kind of admired this person who had such charisma and could talk so well and make friends so well. And, you know, everything about him was just kind of awe-inspiring to me. And you know, he and I became friends. And I know that he knew that I idolized him. At the same time, he treated me like an equal, of course, and we just became the best of friends as time went on. And the reason that I chose to write about this, write the music about him, is because I don't think I'd be here without knowing him, because he got me into jazz. You know, him and my mom, I should give her credit, but he pushed me to the edge with Miles Davis and that sort of thing, and we bonded over that so much, and everything we did together was kind of really special. So the music, whenever I would write music, I would be so eager to share it with him, and he'd be so excited to hear it. And so I felt like the music that came out was in honor of everything that he gave me.
Wow, that's really so amazing. And now I see, you know, years ago I knew a particular individual who specialized in Native American flute, and one of his songs was similar to the title of your CD, but it was turned around. It was a song of the Spirit Brother. So,
oh, interesting.
Yes. So when I saw Songs of the Brother Spirit, and then I heard about the relationship that you had with this really incredible individual, I thought, isn't that funny how we see the comparisons in life? And as we go on in life, we begin to see these associations of different people and how wonderful some traits are that we always aspire to look for or aspire to be. and keep just to read more about your relationship with this man, who is now a man, but you used to be kids together, and sometimes would ride 100 miles or so in Connecticut. That's crazy.
It was crazy. It was quite foolish, you could say.
But you know what? It's something that made you grow. And here's what you were able to do, Josh. You were able to get all of that feeling and put your heart and soul into it. It's no mistake that the ASCAP Young Jazz Composer Awards staff figured out that you had something special because you've won 2 consecutive awards from those folks, and that's pretty prestigious.
Yeah, it was a big honor, yeah.
Wow. That's what happens when you pour your soul and allow yourself to be vulnerable. Do you feel as though you have enough music in you to last a lifetime? Do you feel like stuff is just pouring out of you?
You know, it's very funny that you say that because before I wrote the music that we're going to record in August, which is almost complete, I thought after finishing the Brother Spirit album, I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to do that again. You know, that was 6 years of work, and how is that going to? You know, I just figured, well, it's something that I can do, and I feel great about it, and it turned out well. And then I don't know what happened. I sat down at the piano, and things started to happen, and I had a concept, which I think is really important that I can't just write about. I have to have something that's meaningful to me to say, and literally it flowed out in faster than anything ever has, you know, in terms of my musical writing. And I think maybe there is no limit, at least now, you know.
Well, and that's a big thing, because when you do a project that has been, gosh, a lifetime in the making, you've saved up all of that, and here's the completed project, it's done. So then here's the sophomore effort, and you're thinking, okay, now I've got a time constraint because I want to be able to do this. Do I have enough from the lifetime of stuff that I've stored up? Do I now have enough to make it at least equal to the magic that was in the first? So you just gave me the answer.
Yeah, so, you know, I think the funny thing is that what I've learned from all this is that fortunately you keep on living, and for me, the life experiences are where I get the music from. So when I have a meaningful experience, which happens, you know, often with people in our lives and things that happen to us just from being alive, new material seems to regenerate, you know?
Yeah, I know that's the case, but you know what? Here's what's so wonderful about you. You clearly are somebody who has his ears open all the time and actually savors life. You're able to translate certain things for other people, and I'm going to tell you an example or two as the time goes on with us. You aren't even aware what kind of visions you are able to create for other people. You have no idea that this music that's personal for you affects other people in a personal but different way. That's pretty insane.
That is very insane. Yeah, I'm happy to hear that.
Oh, yeah. Look, let me tell you something. Even this morning, because you sent me the whole project, and I'm so grateful for you, I had heard snippets, and I'm enjoying all of the music. One of the pieces that I heard, and I'll tell you what it was. Actually, it was In Light, There Is Song.
All right.
I went right back to my grandmother and grandfather's backyard in northeast Philadelphia in the summertime, when I knew that I was safe because the family was gathered in the backyard, everybody was having something cool to drink, and I would go back in the house and start to examine all the things in my grandmother's bedroom. That's what your song did for me.
Oh, my goodness. That's incredible.
It really was. And I hadn't thought about that in a good 20, 25 years.
I'm so honored that my music could do that for you. That's amazing.
It really is. Well, you're amazing. You have a different kind of approach when you do your music live. I love the idea that you like the texture and the different feelings of layering the music. Explain that. That's so cool.
I always felt like, you know, with a small group in particular, which is what I'm working with at the moment, there are so many possibilities if you can – you can combine different things, but, you know, for example, I use a voice pretty prominently, but not with words. She's never singing out front. You're not supposed to pay attention to her and nobody else. It's always a group sound, and I can pair her with guitar or one of my woodwinds, for example, and that kind of creates this whole, this kind of gives the melody a whole different kind of spark to it, or it allows it to have a different feeling that it gives off, for example, you know, in the course of the music. So, and for me, I also, it happened over a period of years, I developed this, but I found that if I used to play with just my alto saxophone way back maybe 5 years ago, and I found that it didn't really work so well with the music I was writing, and I didn't know what else to do at that time. And then I picked up the clarinet at the New School where I got my undergrad, and I heard that with a voice, and I realized, oh, this can have a different sound. This can have the sound that isn't is a loud woodwind playing with a voice. It's a whole other unified element. So that's kind of how that developed. And then I started to, you know, add contrapuntal elements, basically, without going too technical, but in order to kind of make the music have this kind of grandeur, this kind of larger than six people kind of sound, which is always my goal, to not sound like six people.
And you know what? It's so funny because I've seen you work on stage. I saw some video footage. And Ariel, by the way, is just magnificent. What a gift she is to bring light to your music. Oh, my God. I'm watching you change instruments on stage, and I swear, Josh, it's like a ballet.
it is, kind of, yes.
It is, and it's just effortless, and I'm watching you, and I'm watching Ariel, and she's not necessarily singing, she's singing syllables, essentially.
Right, yes.
But she knows when to come in, and you've just changed instruments, and she is very calmly centered and focused. She knows when the syllables need to be expressed, because the piece just comes to life. This is what it's like. When I hear you and your songs, it's like reading a book and turning pages to get to the next part. It's like a book that you can't put down, like Da Vinci Code. Oh, my God, what's coming next? Oh, are they going to go to the train station now? Who's coming to get them at the train station? Oh, are they going to go swimming? I swear, it's like that. It's crazy.
Wow. That's
yes.
Amazing.
There's so many colors that you use, and you have a different feel. I told you that my son and I were listening, in a little exchange back and forth that we had, and we're looking at each other when we're hearing you do these magical songs, and I say to him, T, what do you hear? He said, I hear a little Mahavishnu orchestra here. He said, I'm hearing some classical. I'm certainly hearing some fusion. I said, how about Charles Ives? Yep, I hear that too.
Wow. That's great.
Yes, there's a lot of flavors that you feel. And you had a quote about jazz and evolving. Can you remember that quote? Because I got it in front of me.
Let me see if I can. It's funny because I think what I said was that it's evolving. You know, it's not so much of, because there's this constant debate between traditionalists and you know, the more contemporary folk. It's always going on, and it was so rampant when I was an undergrad at the New School, and it was something I grappled with. And basically, what is jazz? You know, it's the kind of thing we're struggling to define. So for me, it's that jazz has become an idea. It's a spirit, because all the musicians that I work with they studied it so intensely, like I did. But that's not what's coming out directly. I'm not just spewing out Coltrane or who was my ultimate, one of my biggest heroes, you know, and I can't just do that. But the fact is that we work together and we have that common background, and we know, you know, from our training and from our love of jazz, we can apply that to anything we do. So that's kind of, for me, what jazz is. That's what my music is becoming. It's taking that spirit and that idea of the freedom that you have, you know, from knowing all the different idioms and things like that, and then applying that to whatever situation you get to.
And it's funny because when you said that, and I wrote it down, and actually it's in the teaser for folks to understand that you were going to be on the show today, it brought even more into focus the title of the CD, Songs of the Brother Spirit, because you really do believe that jazz is more of a spirit than a defined idea. That's so important. And what you just said, it's funny because just this morning I read something that I heard that Jaco Pastorius said.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I have no competition because I'm not competing."
That's beautiful.
It's beautiful. He didn't understand how much of a definition that was of world peace, actually.
Yeah, it certainly translates.
It doesn't it? Oh, so was it a glorious experience for you to do this project? Tell me about the day to day of this, because it sounds like you had a ball doing it.
You know, it's cliche, but it was absolutely a dream come true. And I said to the musicians, you know, countless times, I still tell them because we're still working together, I said, you guys have made my dream come true, that to make this music that I've been dreaming of for so many years to actually come alive and to be as moving as it is. Like, to me, it's extremely moving. Of course, it's personal, but I think you highlighted that it's moving in a universal sense. But, you know, basically it was... The writing of it was amazing, and I never thought, you know, when I was writing it, I wrote it in a practice room at the New School when I was a sophomore in college, not knowing how it was going to be realized. And then when it actually came out, it was when I actually heard it the first time played with the musicians. It struck me so hard. I couldn't believe that this was coming to life. You know, it was overwhelming, to be honest. And so when we recorded it, and then the production and all that, it was just one exciting moment after another. It was certainly difficult to pull it off. You know, it's a lot of rehearsal. You can't imagine the amount of practice and work that goes into it. But
sure,
when we do have those moments, you know, especially when we're on stage and something new will happen that I'd always wanted to happen but never quite got it in rehearsal, then it's even more. It's renewing, and it's always refreshing, and it's always exciting. And to be able to do it, I consider myself extremely lucky that I get to have the musicians and friends that I can work with who really want to make it come to life.
Well, one of the musicians that you have worked with, man, I don't even know what to say, because I found out about him a few years ago. Maybe I was late in just discovering him, but there's so many wonderful musicians. But sometimes there's even a step further than wonderful. I consider Gilad Hexelman to be very intuitive.
Definitely.
And when I heard that guitar, oh my gosh, he's just a cut above. And maybe it's because he's got Israeli roots. It just seems that whenever there is someone who hasn't been born in the States, you can bring something so much fresher, more original, creative, because you've got a different perspective. So for
Absolutely,
him to work
yeah.
with you, I mean, it was beautiful, just beautiful.
I was definitely, you know, working with him was outstanding. It happened very last minute, and he responded so incredibly. He did some things that I didn't anticipate when we were rehearsing together, that actually sometimes I'd go back and rework something because I thought, oh, well, Gilad can do this, so this can really fly, you know, in a whole other way. He definitely has a different way of approaching music, and like you said, he's really intuitive, really musical, and also, you know, he's very humble in how he approaches everything. He wants to make the music how it needs to be. He's not going to impose himself, so he just kind of gives in a very selfless way.
Well, that's pretty incredible, because I also pick up that he's fearless. So to hear that he's humble and he doesn't step on toes because he wants your project to shine, and then on top of that being fearless, woo, you really were blessed because you had some incredible folks around you. How long have you known Ariel?
I've known her, boy, since the very first day of college. I met her at orientation, and I mean, I'm sure you can agree that was extremely lucky because I've been friends with her since that day. I remember that day meeting her, and we just I heard her sing, and I thought she was great, but I can't tell you how she's advanced even from that day when she sounded so great. She's on a whole other planet these days. You know, it's a constant. She does a special training that allows her voice to grow in new and surprising ways. In any case, I've known her for I guess 7 years now. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because one of the beautiful CDs that I've heard from a legend, and I'm talking about Charles Lloyd. Charles Lloyd and Jason Moran have done a collaboration together. I was thinking of you in terms of he and Jason because somebody wrote in the way of a review for Hagar's song, that when you hear a couple of people who have worked together so closely, who know each other so well, it sometimes feels like an intrusion when you listen in, because the intimacy is just so palpable. And that's what I feel like with you and Ariel. There is a connection that you have. She gets you. She gets where you're going, and she feels the vibe of the intention of the music. That's a gift.
It's very perceptive of you. I couldn't agree more. You know, when I bring something to her, I don't have to give her that much direction because her voice is so beautiful and she has so much musicality in her. And we've worked together for so long, and she knows what I love, what music, you know, drives me, and what I'm looking for whenever I write it. So I don't have to tell her that much. It just happens, you know, and it's interesting that you pick up on that. It's absolutely how I feel about it.
Wow, that's cool. She just she looks so serene when I've seen her. I have to see you. I absolutely have to see you live so that I can experience
it. I hope you do,
yeah. Oh, my gosh, yes. Listen, is it okay if we play? I know that you had some songs in mind, but I wanted to play Meditation while I have you with me.
Oh, yes, please do, yes.
And this song is special in a couple of different ways. You had your parents in mind with this, didn't you?
Yeah, it's about them. You know, we go on this family vacation every year. We've gone for the last, I think, 19 or 20 years. I don't know.
Wow.
To the South Jersey Shore, which isn't, you know, that luxurious, but it was special for us, and we keep going, and now everyone in our family goes. One year, a couple of years ago, I was sitting on the beach with my dad, and I just, you know, I've been thinking about this, but it kind of just hit me. What if one day my dad is not there with me? And of course, translated to my mom. And for months after that, I was just constantly thinking about it. It was so upsetting to me, the idea that it's going to happen someday, you know. And that's what that piece is about. It's about that moment when it hits you. You know, we all deal with our parents' mortality and with mortality in general. And it's not meant to be this sort of dark, you know, awful thing. It's meant to be an acceptance as well as something that makes you appreciate those people more. And I feel like because of those fears, I appreciate my parents for the people they are more than I would if I hadn't been thinking about it.
I know exactly what you mean, because I used to have those kinds of thoughts all the time with my parents who had me older in life. Where did you go when you went on vacation to South Jersey?
Ocean City, New Jersey.
Stop the music. That's our second home.
Really?
Yes. When I was a little girl, every single summer, we went to Ocean City, New Jersey, and that's where my sister lives right now.
Oh, my goodness. That's our second home. That's exactly, we go there all the time. I can name all the streets. I know all the shops.
Do you really?
Part of our family. Oh,
we,
yeah.
We stayed every year at 20th and Asbury.
Oh, we used to be on Asbury. We were a little higher. We were in the 50s usually, 45, 50. Now we're more on Central because we like the beach houses. But, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And that's where Grace Kelly from Philadelphia used to vacation all the time. And
oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. She had a house there. And the boardwalk is just the bomb, isn't it?
It's wonderful. It's great. You know, that Mac and Mango pizza and the Core Brothers. Yeah, of course.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That is so funny. Isn't it a small world, Josh?
It is, yes.
That's crazy. This song now even means more because we've got roots. This is so cool. Joshua Klossman is our guest this hour, and this is from Songs of the Brother Spirit, a song called Meditation on Hybrid Jazz. That is just stunning. Oh, my gosh. Joshua Klusman. Oh, my God. Thank you so much for this music. It's it really is layered in a few different ways, Josh. Honestly, that particular piece took me again back in time to when I was going to church when the Latin Mass was being said.
Wow.
Yep, because when you would go to some churches, because of the acoustics in the church, there would be this exquisite reverberation across the walls, one to the other, as if the walls were calling to one another. And then when the choir was singing, it would be a whole different story. But there's something that is so spiritual about your work, and you may not have intended it to be that way, but it is.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, the you certainly touch on something. The reverberation is a really important part of it, I think. I know exactly what that enveloping feeling when you're in some sort of acoustic space like a church. It can be really humbling, I think, and encompassing.
Yes, actually, you know what it is? It's embryonic. That's what it is.
Absolutely. You could say that, yes.
Yes. It just, that safety factor is there. It's a pretty rare thing to say that an artist's music makes you feel safe. That's pretty powerful.
It is. I'm very honored. Thank you very much.
You are so welcome. How do you foresee this career of yours unfolding? I mean, you've had some amazing things. My God, you were a soloist at Lincoln Center. You'll have to explain those circumstances. But how do you see things unfolding for you? What would you like to be doing, say, in 5 years' time? Or is that a silly question?
Oh, it's not a silly question. My first dream was to get this album out and to have it be heard. And hearing you say all these things is kind of like a reminder that my dream has come true. But, of course, us being humans, once we get something, we seem to want more. My real goal is to be able to play this in a place where it will be heard. You know, I've had some, I mean, you can imagine the horror of taking a music like this into a club or a bar and people are eating and they're not really listening. And that happened to me, you know, well before we recorded this album. And my dream is to be able to just play and be able to have people listen and to connect with them and to share this music with whoever I can. You know, playing at places like Newport Jazz Festival or Carnegie Hall would be, or Lincoln Center even, with this music would be absolutely outstanding. And I just wanted to keep making music and keep performing in places like that if I can. That's my 5-year, 10-year, 20-year goal.
You raise an interesting point, Josh, because with your particular kind of music, it just absolutely commands the respect of silence and not cocktail glasses clinking.
Of course.
How does one manage to avoid those places? Are you in a position where you absolutely demand that it's going to be a listening place? How are you able to decipher that?
Well, you know, you raise another great point. It's very hard with the way that jazz is programmed, at least in the United States. I mean, I haven't been to Europe yet. That's my goal, another goal. But
The
way it is in the United States, it's like jazz is not really considered that important, and it's often ignored. And it gets very busy, and people think they're not educated, so they can't listen to it, and so many other reasons why it's perceived as inaccessible. So programming it and booking is very difficult. When I choose places, I choose places based on exactly what you said, that they're not going to be places where people are just coming to hang out. They're going to be moved and to give themselves to the performance. And so there aren't that many places yet that I can play because, of course, my name is nothing important yet and people don't want to give you the opportunity yet. So it's difficult. I found a few great places. You know, we played this amazing space in Vermont. I don't know if you've ever been up there, the Vermont Jazz Center.
Oh, wow.
It's in Brattleboro, and it's this gorgeous wooden space out in, you know, it's very suburban out there, kind of rural, and the acoustics in there were fantastic. You can imagine, you know, the same kind of reverberation we were talking about. People came and they were really moved, and it was like a special event, and that's the kind of places that I'm looking for, you know.
Yeah, I really have a heart for certain jazz artists. Some really don't care about the level of noise because they actually can go into themselves, and I don't know how they can possibly do that, because to me it's just so rude when people conduct their social activities in the audience when there's somebody on stage pouring out their heart and soul. Hello?
Right. Terrible.
And I have actually seen a friend of mine who at one time stopped the show and admonished the audience. But see, you can't do that either, because then your music somehow loses its authenticity, because suddenly, and you know, your ego has taken over, and
yes,
it becomes, don't you know who I am?
Yes, and that's never going to work.
Right, you don't want to do that. So you're just wise to be able to, if you possibly can, pick and choose the places, because there are beautiful rooms to play, and people come there expressly to sit down. They don't even bring anybody socially. They sometimes come by themselves just to
mm-hmm.
hear who's going to play.
Right, and that's certainly where what I'm always looking for. I wouldn't book a place, you know, that people are just going there to talk or to ignore, you know, the music. That wouldn't work.
Well, I'm so in anticipation of being able to see you. You've got a couple of very cool places coming up, do you not?
I do, yeah. We're going to California in June. This is a first for me. I've never been to California.
Oh,
I can't
wow.
say how excited I am. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's really thrilling.
Yes, you're going to play at Catalina's, aren't you?
We're doing Catalina's, and then we're going to San Diego to do this amazing new place called Dizzy's. It's funny. I haven't seen it, but I've read about it and talked to the owner, and it's basically a jet ski sales place. But the jet ski facility, they donated they have like a stage, a showroom. They donated it to this guy Chuck Perrin, who runs the Dizzy's jazz series, and he has, you know, a full grand piano and everything you need. And it's a great acoustic space because it's a big showroom, and that's where they have the music.
Wow.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it will. You know what? There's a few places now that I've heard that people are thinking outside of the box. I'm not sure how thrilled I am about this title, but in my old stomping grounds in Nashville, Tennessee, there is now a new venue called Jazz and Jokes.
So oh, my goodness.
Right, half jazz, half comedy club. And I know some folks who are going to play there, and I'll have to figure out from what they say if it's going to be some place that I would recommend. But at least...
Yeah, I'd be curious.
Yeah. I mean, people are being creative, at least. So as long as we've got some rooms to hear jazz, here's something for you. Make sure that you friend Jackie Ryan, the incredible singer who's based in California. Jackie is internationally known. Josh, let me tell you something. She is one of the most profound singers I've ever heard, not only in this era, but maybe of all time. That's how good she is.
Wow.
And her heart is as big as Montana. She is
wow.
a wonderful human being. And she will actually, if she can, she will come and support you. But it would be good to pick her brain as to places to go for you. And I'll bet you that you stay friends with her for a long time.
Oh, well, I'm going to take your recommendation. Yes, definitely. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. And check out her CD. It's called Listen Here. And it features John Clayton and friends, including Gerald Clayton.
Oh,
and,
wow, that's great.
Oh, my God, she's just incredible, and she loves the idea of being in a position where she can sort of for a lack of a better word, mentor as people go along.
Yeah, that sounds exactly right for me.
That's wonderful. So when you go and do your thing in California now, who will you take with you?
The core, what I'm calling the core band, everybody you heard on the record.
Oh, great.
Guitar. Yes, of course. I mean, they can't do it without these people. They're just phenomenal and they're essential to it. I'm taking Angelo DiLoretto on piano, Craig Aiken on bass, Ariel Feinman, of course, the vocalist. Jeff Miles will be on guitar. And then, did I leave anybody out?
Rodrigo?
Yes, everybody. Oh, of course. How could I forget my drummer? Yes, Rodrigo Recabarren. Yeah, he's recently just got endorsed by Zildjian, which is the cymbal company. So that's
oh,
very
great.
Exciting for him.
So
yeah, he's an amazing Chilean drummer, yeah.
How did you find him? Because that's a different kind of feel. I love his feel on the drums.
Oh, I couldn't say enough nice things about it. He blows me away every time he picks up the sticks. You know, I met him we were just at some rehearsal at NYU one day. It was many years ago. I hadn't even entered the program yet. And he was just subbing, you know, playing the drums, and I was taking a solo, and the way he played with me, it was just, there was something there. You know, you can feel it, like love at first sight almost, you might say. And I took his information and I called him, for pretty soon after that, and I've never looked back. You know, he's, and we become good friends also. He's just an amazing person.
I am so happy to hear that things are falling into place for you, because this CD is so powerful, and now I'm just thrilled because I have the whole album, and people will hopefully not get sick of hearing you, Josh, but I'm going to be playing a lot of tunes by you.
Oh, I'm thrilled. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Anything I can do to help, I will, because you are the face of new jazz. You really are.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You, oh my gosh, thank you. It's just so thrilling. And you said something, I have to make mention of this because I got the biggest chuckle out of this. Besides playing alto and soprano sax, clarinet, flute, piano, and melodica, I never heard anybody describe that instrument, but you said it's a small keyboard with an air tube, making it a wind piano hybrid. So I thought, oh, for sure, he's got to be on the show now.
Of course, right, the hybrid, yeah.
Oh, you really are a hybrid. Do you feel that way? Isn't that exciting?
I think that's exactly how I feel, because people ask me, what is your music like? You know, everybody wants to know when you say you do music, and
sure.
I can't just say it's one thing or the other, and it will be a lying to myself, because there's so many kinds of music that have, you know, made their big mark on me that I'll never, you know, like Rachmaninoff, for example, or of course Miles, or even some rock people, you know, some rock artists and things like that. So those kind of things, they blend together, and so hybrid would be the way to describe it, yeah.
Well, and here's another thing to consider. This morning while I was listening intently, I did an association in my head of an artist that I have also come to know. His name is Omar Akram, and he works very closely with my friend Greg Karugas, who's very much involved in contemporary jazz. Well, mm-hmm. Omar and Greg have just won a Grammy. Omar has a CD called Echoes of Love, and he won for Best New Age Album. And Joshua, I'm telling you, there's ambient music in what you do as well.
Definitely.
So it would be, I think, smart for you and your staff, whoever, to market that to ambient stations as well. I don't know how that works, but you and Omar would probably be fast friends.
Well, I wrote him down. I'm going to look him up.
Yep, Akram. He's based in California. Comes from a United Nations family. His dad was a diplomat, so he's lived
wow.
in a bunch of different places. So naturally, his view of the world is a global vision.
I like it already.
Yep. And you will really gravitate to what you hear on that CD, obviously, because it's an award-winning album. But just another person for you to get in touch with before you go to California.
I like it. Thank you very much. I'll certainly do that.
You're welcome. Oh, this has been great. Thank you so much for the time. It's just awesome to be able to talk to somebody who is just so vastly intelligent and passionate at the same time.
Thank you. It's been an honor talking with you. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. And I know that you had instructed me, not necessarily instructed, but suggested that you would like a third track to be this unbelievable Nowhere Trail 3. Would you explain, because this is a longer piece and I just love it. It's like a tour without ever leaving the farm.
Wow, that's a wonderful way to describe it. Well, the Nowhere Trail, and I'm glad that I sent you the whole record. When you have a chance, you'll hear, if you haven't already, it's a three-part piece, which each piece corresponds to a different day of this, you know, epic trip that Justin and I, you know, the best friend we've been talking about, took together. And this trip was kind of, you know, because I was never, in all honesty, I was never one of those wild children. I was pretty, my parents raised me to be, you know, I didn't do much in terms of the, you know, partying or whatever you might call it. But I realized when I was 20 or 21 or whatever age that I wanted to try one last wild thing. And so we took this trip trying to go, in the Lake George area. There's this place in the mountains called the French Point. We had gone there as on a family trip with his family some years before that. It was a really special hike that we took together. And so we wanted to reclaim that. And so we decided, stupidly, to ride our bikes there from Poughkeepsie, New York, took the train out from Grand Central. And we wanted to do it in an entire weekend with no place, no planning of where to stay or how to do it. You know, and I hadn't been training, so this is 150 miles each way. So, so the first day was disastrous because I was not prepared. He wasn't prepared, and you know, flat tires and tired bodies and dehydration and all the worst things you can imagine.
Oh my gracious!
And the title comes from I was on a surface level. We never found French Point. When we got there, we finally got there on day two to that area. We couldn't find it for the life of us. So the Nowhere Trail, we were going nowhere. And day three, which is the part I sent you, which actually closes the album, and is kind of an amalgam. It's you know, getting up in the morning. We slept over in the woods there by Lake George. You get up in the morning and we were racing back to catch a train. And I'm going through all these feelings of, you know, I felt abandoned by him and I felt like, who is this person that I had been idolizing my whole life? And you're feeling angry. But at the same time, there were these flashes where you remember, you know, okay, I'm just upset, but I do love this person. And this is, you know, my very best friend and someone I can trust. And so there's these different themes of music going on where you're having the brotherhood feeling as well as the nervousness, the paranoia, the anxiety, all these different things coming in at once.
And actually, it just maybe it's to the point, this song, where you feel as though you'll always have that bond, but you're breaking away and becoming your own man.
That is exactly what I would have said. Yes, that was what I wanted to send off on the record, was that because people ask me, are you still friends after this terrible thing? Well, yes, and now we're equals. You know, I don't idolize him, but I love him as the person that he is, and I take care of myself, and I'm in command of me. You know,
that was exactly what was supposed to happen. That's a beautiful thing. Wow. That's just gorgeous, and what a way to send off. Thank you so much, and I'm telling you what, back to Ocean City, Kevin Bacon from Philadelphia, of course you know who Kevin is, also spent a lot of time in Ocean City. I will probably see him in the next couple of months. I'm going to make sure that he knows who you are, so maybe you two can be in touch, because of course he's got the Bacon brothers that he does too. So,
oh yeah,
he will want to know about a fellow Ocean City lover who does music. So don't be surprised if he doesn't reach out to you.
Well, that would be great. And thank you again for having me. It's been great talking with you.
It's been great talking to you. Bless your heart. And I will see you down the road. And it will not be a nowhere trail. Okay?
I hope not.
It won't. Thank you, Joshua, so much.
Thank you, Trish.
All right. Bye-bye. Joshua Klosman. Yes. Oh, so beautiful. Where do you hear the song? Nowhere Trail 3, part of a trilogy from Songs of the Brother Spirit on Hyper Jazz. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz. Thank you. stand myself there. Our very own Debbie Poole from Baltimore, Maryland, USA. My goodness. Let me tell you something about Debbie Poole. I have known Debbie now for several years. I told her beloved Matt, who was in the chat room earlier, that any time that I have seen Debbie, she always has it together. She sounds exactly the way you just heard her sound on CD. She is amazing. She's actually, this is strong to say, but it's as if she was sort of a reincarnation of Phyllis Hyman. She is absolutely splendid. When she does Phyllis songs, your world stops. Debbie frequently sings with Ray Gaskins, who has been on the show, an incredible saxophonist. And Ray likes to work with Debbie, and their voices blend. So when Ray sings harmony with Debbie, it's really something to behold. Debbie Poole is going to be at the Blue Dolphin in Gambrills, Maryland tonight. If you are within the sound of my voice and you can get over there, Mama can't do it tonight, but I really would like to support the Blue Dolphin because they're showcasing worthy acts like this, including some really cool jazz. So if you can get to go there, tickets I think are $20, absolutely reasonable for the talent that Debbie has and also her band, because she's going to have some ace players with her. Debbie Poole, the name of that tune, My Body, from the CD In the Midst of Love. Now, you can Google Debbie Poole. There is a website, and I believe it's Debbie-P-O-O-L-E.com. That's the new website. She's also on Facebook. You'll see some videos on YouTube. Mind-blowing little videos. Thank you to Matt Williams, who is her overseer slash manager. Just an incredible voice. And anything that we can do to support her, we do. We also heard on guitar, Ralph Towner, and on vibraphone, Gary Burton. Some really choice work from the summer of 1974 in West Germany. That was called Matchbook, title track from that CD. I have heard this album described as full of yearning. Ooh, I can feel that. Oh, yearning is a big word. Very interesting about both of these guys, honest to goodness. Ralph Towner was inspired to a great deal by Bill Evans, the pianist, and bases a lot of the feeling on his work on guitar of what Bill did on piano. Ralph likes to keep things acoustic. He likes to keep things in a quieter vein. And what he does frequently, he actually uses a matchbook to use on his guitar, whether it's nylon or steel, and he creates a certain sound with that matchbook. So, you know, you think to yourself, well, that's odd, a title of a song, Matchbook. Now you know a little bit of why he could have done that. So Gary Burton, speaking of fascinating, and Ralph, by the way, is 73. Gary Burton is 70. Gary picked up the vibraphone at the age of 6. Yow! So you know he was meant to do it. He's gone through some changes through his life, more than most people, I would say. Think about the fact that the Brotherhood of Jazz Musicians, certainly a testosterone-laden organization through the years, right? Gary, at one time, was married to Catherine Goldwyn, the granddaughter of Sam Goldwyn of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, the huge Hollywood conglomerate. Well, Catherine is the sister of Tony Goldwyn, Do you know the name Tony Goldwyn these days? He plays the president on the TV show Scandal. I think that you know who he is. But Gary and Catherine are no longer married. She is a very artistic person. They had two children together. I think that Catherine is doing some really monumental artistic endeavors in the Los Angeles region. And Gary, and I want you to think about the times in which he has lived, because he's 70, and when they got divorced, Gary went through a lot of soul searching. And in 1994, he was on the show Fresh Air with Terry Gross, and he came out. So it's a pretty cool thing. It's becoming less of an issue, but I say this because having gone to Temple University, where many of my friends were gay, and it was a source of great, great concern for them to come out to very many people at that particular time in the 70s. Wow. It was just a different climate. So in 94, things were still a little, iffy, I guess you could say, to come out. And now Gary is serene because he knows who he is, got a longtime partner, Jonathan, who has been by his side. And now it's not so much of a big deal because we know that Jason Collins just came out to be an active sports player in a major league. Wow, that's something. So you need to talk about this stuff, because the people who say, oh, why is it such a big deal? Let me tell you something. It is. And to have the chutzpah, the bravery, the I don't care who knows, I'm going to be me, in whatever field, to be comfortable in one's own skin, oh, sweet Mary, Mother of God, it means everything. So I just love the fact that Gary Burton is open and accessible. I know that a number of younger musicians have come to him, and he's been a source of great comfort and consolation. So I just have a love in my heart for Gary Burton that's not like a lot of love. He's just really honest and authentic. His music speaks for itself, God knows. Woohoo! Doing a lot of stuff with Chick Corea, doing a lot of stuff in a tandem or in a trio or in a quartet. He's wonderful. So is Josh Quasman. Is he a love? You just want to pick him up and squeeze him. 24 years old. How is he turning out that music? Somebody please answer me. How is he turning out music that you don't even hear from people in their 60s? Just amazing work. What is he going to be like when he's 40? Woo! And the fact that he has ties to Ocean City, New Jersey, that just trips me out. Let us turn our attention to a very interesting set that you are about to hear. You are going to hear a couple of songs back to back, one certainly with a global slant, another involving an artist that I alluded to when we were talking to Joshua, Charles Lloyd. And the vocal that you're going to hear, the voice of Chris McNulty will certainly be familiar to you if you've heard this show at all, but she's in company with her late son, the great Chap One. So you'll be going, huh, it certainly is a hybrid show. Yes, it is. And hopefully it will make sense to you in the order in which we play these songs, but that's the beauty of the show. You just never know what you're going to hear. This is Bilal Karaman, who is another young man, 32 years old, who is from Istanbul, Turkey. His guitar work has definitely a different kind of flavor. He was part of the International Jazz Day on the last day of April. This is in conjunction with his friend Lars Danielson. This is the title track of Bilal's latest CD called Patika on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you. story of the street life where you play a position, shit might work out right. But one day walking, 5-0 flip, flash daylight. Same fits the description, profile and height. Now it's just another average hood, Saturday night. It's raining, a street light. I'm praying they don't find my stash until I take my life. Cause stuck in the system vice is when you find the system is trite. So what, I married Mary Jane, yeah, I made her my wife. And I'm a diamond straight shining for life. On a movement making journey, heating these souls on ice. And make them think twice of what they do and how they live.
The sunrise and the moon fall, and the tide change in the blue fog. All my shoes, soldiers stand tall. I'm doing this here for all of y'all. As the sunrise.
Twisted up system, listen. To find a peace of mind, I often follow my rhythm. Spinning what inherited musical bread breed. Break bread with real famous chef, yes indeed. Back to plant seeds, mind cross overseas. Paint the picture, flow the currency. What's the current? Tools for your soul to get rid. I ain't in the kitchen on a big pot stirring crack. I'm feeding them soul food, had a world straight hollering at. Boys a little hotter than the grease. See a son of the man, son of the woman in sand. Chef back in these sons of bitches. Trouble on their hands, so when you hear it all, my soldiers just stand.
Play that song. I have been thinking about Sam McNulty, also known as Chap One, and I saw something that his mom, Chris McNulty, had put on her page the other day, and I thought, you know what, I really would love to play that song back-to-back with Charles Lloyd and Jason Moran, and God only knows. What you just heard is from Strange Frequencies. And it's one of those songs, it got under my skin the first time I heard it for the soldiers. This young man is no longer with us. Sam was born on March the 19th, 1981, passed away suddenly July the 16th, 2011. And yesterday was the 16th. His mom marked an anniversary on her wall on Facebook, and just to show you, I love Chris so much, and because I love Chris, I have come to know her son after his passing from this earth. I feel so close to that young'un, I don't know what to do, actually. Every time you walk in our door, you see the album. I have it up against the wall so you see his face. Sam was this beautiful creature, and surrounded himself with some really loving spirits. Sam's parents both are internationally known. I know who his dad is. I'm not going to say. Sam and he did not see each other frequently, and when they did, it wasn't altogether what you would want for someone who is so wonderful as he. This particular album showcases some people that Mom has worked with through the years, and let me tell you, it's just gorgeous. This synthesis of hip-hop and R&B and jazz, and I just wanted to make sure you knew the name, Chap One. Sam McNulty, born in Australia, came to Mom when she moved to New York City, and then moved back to Australia. Just so gifted, just full of hope and redemption and resurrection and love questing in all ways. And in every way, he just embodied the whole notion of love. Just a beautiful soul. We heard Charles Lloyd, Memphis-born Charles Lloyd, 75 years young, on saxes and flutes, on this particular endeavor, Hagar's Song, along with Jason Moran, who he has partnered with since 2007. a particular take on a Beach Boys song, and that's odd, you say. Not so, because this man, Charles Lloyd, so respected in jazz circles, has had experience in a lot more than jazz. Certainly immersing himself in the Memphis scene when he was young, classically trained, then played with Chico Hamilton, Cannonball Adderley, The Doors, Roger McGuinn, The Grateful Dead, and The Beach Boys. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, all of those, and acquainted himself with many on keyboard. Keith Jarrett, Bobo Stenson, Brian Wilson he had a particular relationship with, God bless him, and also a fellow transcendental meditation follower, so they had that in common as well as the music. So that's why you heard God Only Knows from the new Hagar's song with Jason Moran. Just beautiful, interesting musical lineages, and then the actual lineage of Charles Lloyd, African, Cherokee, Mongolian, and Irish. He is so bloody beautiful. When you look at that face, oh my God, it's like a roadmap to the world. It's just gorgeous. We heard BilalKaraman.com, K-A-R-A-M-A-N, Patika, along with Lars Danielson. Bilal is a very interesting cat. He is 32 years old, based in Istanbul, Turkey. Got a bachelor's degree from jazz performance at the university there, and actually has a virtual guitar academy in Turkey online. He is one of these guys with a different ear for what jazz is supposed to be, which is why I love playing him. Let's play a couple more tunes, shall we? I really want to do this. I don't know if we're going to get to all of them, but let's go for it. Let's give you something from Baltimore, Maryland, but he is known all over the world, another guitar wizard. Shoo! Carl Filipiak from the 90s. This is called Right on Time on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Hybrid Jazz.
Whatever it is. your face and try to steal your man from you. Now, but be wise. Keep your mouth shut. Don't advertise your man. Don't be a fool. Don't advertise your man.
Look like a highbrow.
Yeah.
I've seen her change it at least 3 times a day. What do you think she's doing now? Why you're so far away? She's loving your man in your own damn bed.
Yeah.
Better call for the doctor, mama. Got to be wise. Keep your mouth shut. Don't advertise your man. Watch your mouth.
Ladies. Oh my goodness. The woman who was responsible for putting Bonnie Raitt on that path back in the 60s to focus on the blues, Sippy Wallace, God bless her, God rest her soul, born in 1898, died in 1986 on her 88th birthday. Women, be wise. Keep your mouth shut. Don't advertise your man. You hear me? Let me tell you something. Having done that at one point, it ain't good. It ain't good at all. Bonnie Raitt's going to be at the Chesapeake Bay Blues Festival this Sunday. The acts are going to be pretty much all female. Deanna Bogart, Mavis Staples, and Bonnie Raitt. Oh, I am loving life. Don't know if we're going to go, but man, it's going to be really heart-wrenching if we don't. Woo! We also heard Jaco Pastorius, Punk Jazz, the Anthology, born in Norristown, PA in 1951, moved to Fort Lauderdale where he found his niche in life. Have a quote on Facebook that just put out a little earlier. In an interview in 1977 with Julie Coryell, he said, "I have no competition because I'm not competing." Oh, if more people would understand that. One of the greatest bass players that ever drew breath. CarlFilippiak.com has more on the illustrious guitar player who you heard at the beginning of the set, Dennis Chambers on drums, on that album, Right on Time. Carl's going to be in June at a very cool stint with Claire Daly, who you heard on the show. We might be getting back on the show this coming Tuesday in conjunction with Janice Rochelle Littlejohn. It's going to be an all-female show, pretty much. It's going to be cool. Have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to all the wonderful friends in the chat room, and we'll see you on Tuesday on Hybrid Jazz.